We've all felt anxious from time to time. Job interviews, meeting the in-laws, first day of school jitters. But for some of us, anxiety crops up all the time in situations that others might find easy to navigate, and it doesn't go away. That can take a toll on our work, our relationships, even our feelings of self-worth. Anxiety disorders are very common in Australia. One in seven of us is going to develop one. But many people are still confused about what it looks like, and that can stop them seeking help for a very long time. If anxiety is something you've struggled with, what helped you to deal with it, and what helped or hindered you in seeking treatment? We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can get in touch on Facebook. And if you'd rather stay anonymous, you can do that. You can send us a direct message via Facebook. Dr. Jeannie Yu is a GP and clinical advisor to NPS Medicine Wise, a government-funded not-for-profit organisation aimed at improving our health decisions. And Dr. Simon Kinsella is a clinical psychologist who treats many clients with anxiety disorder. Welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you.
Very pleased to be here.
Now, Jeannie, a recent survey that NPS Medicine Wise did found some startling information on how long it takes an anxiety sufferer to seek help. What did you find?
Hilary, NPS Medicine Wise commissioned a survey of 1,000 Australians, and we wanted to know what their understanding of anxiety and anxiety disorders was. And so one of the questions we asked was, how long do you think it takes, on average, for people with an anxiety disorder to seek help from a medical professional? And we found that the vast majority of people underestimated this. So 69% thought it takes people less than 5 years to seek professional help, whereas the average time it takes for someone living with an anxiety disorder is actually a very large 8.2 years.
So there's obviously an element of misunderstanding about anxiety out there, but do we know why it can take people so long to get help?
There can be a range of different factors as to why that takes so long. Probably the biggest factor is the time it takes for an individual to recognise that the experiences they're going through are actually part of an anxiety disorder. There's not really the same level of understanding of what an anxiety disorder is, compared perhaps to some other mental health conditions such as depression. So anxiety is a spectrum, and as you described in your introduction, all of us are familiar with the experience of feeling anxious and the physical or psychological symptoms that go with that. But an anxiety disorder is more than that. It's where the worry you're experiencing is excessive, where it's long-term and frequently recurring, and probably most importantly, where it has a negative impact on your day-to-day life and makes it harder for you to function.
I've read about anxiety sufferers saying, I just thought it was me for years and years. I didn't realise it was a disorder as such. But Jeannie, is part of the problem that there might be some confusion between physical symptoms and the fact that there's a psychological overarching disorder?
That can certainly be part of the issue. So when we feel anxious, along with feeling stressed or worried or tense, we commonly have physical symptoms as well. That might be, you know, palpitations or trembling or dizziness or nausea. And sometimes those physical symptoms are more prominent and more well recognised by the person that's experiencing them, and they become the focus. And it takes time and working with someone like your GP to understand that actually the underlying issue isn't so much physical, but it's psychological. It's part of an anxiety disorder.
Dr. Simon Kinsella, you see a lot of patients with anxiety. What do you make of that 8-year delay? Does that gel with what you see with your clients?
Yeah, I guess for a lot of my clients, it takes them quite a long time to recognise that their patterns of thinking and the types of symptoms that they feel are different from normal. A lot of clients that I see that might have a generalised anxiety disorder, when they look back, they'll say, I've always had a tendency to worry or to get a bit more worked up around exams or to be a bit perfectionistic. And these things on reflection actually form the basis of the kind of condition that brings them to treatment in the end.
Well, and your patterns of thinking are so deeply bound up with your sense of your own identity. What does an anxiety disorder look like? How do you know you've got one?
Well, there are actually different anxiety disorders. There's a generalised anxiety disorder. disorder, which is a very pervasive pattern of thinking and worrying about what could go wrong. So a lot of people will look at that as just being normal kind of thinking, perhaps worrying a bit more about health or about exams or about finance or whatever it might be. And so, for them, it's very difficult to differentiate that pattern of thinking from what most people talk about every day. It's when it starts to heighten and they find themselves not being able to get to sleep or not being able to stay asleep, they might start to feel some physiological symptoms, like they might notice that their heart's racing a lot more than normal, or they perhaps get a bit dizzy. Often my clients first present for treatment when they've suddenly had a very strong physiological reaction, like they feel like they're going to faint or they feel like they need to race out of the venue that they're in because they're basically experiencing a mini panic attack.
And what kind of toll can that take on people if they're putting up with that kind of thing for up to 8 years?
Well, first of all, there's things like sleep deprivation. So they'll come to work much more tired. It can impact on relationships if they're constantly ruminating and going over the same old territory with partners. It just undermines the quality of life too, because they can't easily be present in the moment and really get the richness out of what they're doing.
Jeannie, you're a GP. How widespread a problem is anxiety in your experience, and is it a growing problem?
So anxiety is a very common problem seen in general practice. We see a lot of mental health disorders in our patient population, and anxiety is even more common than depression, and sometimes people present with a mixture of those two. So certainly it's something that's really important for GPs to be well across, and that's one of the reasons why we're conducting our national education program to provide GPs with an update on the latest evidence on diagnosing and treating anxiety.
And Jeannie, I'm wondering too, at that first GP visit, what might an anxiety sufferer be told in terms of confirming a diagnosis or treatment options?
So it can take more than one consultation to fully explore and assess what's going on for an individual. For example, although someone might come in saying, this is how I've been feeling, and I think maybe it's related to an anxiety disorder, that's probably a less common situation. I think it's more common for people when they come in to say, oh, this is what I've been going through, I feel this way, I also have had these physical symptoms, I'm not quite sure what's going on. And then there's a journey where we need to work out whether what's happening is primarily a mental health disorder. Is there an underlying physical issue? Sometimes there are some physical conditions such as problems with your thyroid or with your heart that might mimic some of those symptoms of anxiety. And once we've been through that journey and it's clear that what's going on is an anxiety disorder, then there's often a process of reframing that's needed. So there's a lot of stigma and misunderstanding and stereotypes, I think, about anxiety disorders. And so it's really important that the patient understands that what's going on is not all just made up or in their head or a sign of weakness, but is a legitimate disorder for which effective treatments do exist.
And Jeannie, some of that stigma can have real-world impacts. We've got a text message saying, my partner seems to have anxiety but doesn't want to get therapy in case it raises her life insurance premiums. What can I tell her?
So that's quite a common concern, what the implications will be if someone does receive a formal diagnosis. I guess that those kinds of concerns need to be balanced against the benefit of having a clear diagnosis, and that being the basis of putting into practice an effective treatment plan. So I'm sure we'll be speaking more about it, but treatments such as psychological treatments like cognitive behaviour therapy and where they're necessary, medicines such as antidepressant medicines are effective in a large proportion collection of people. And so it is very worthwhile having that diagnosis and then doing something about what you've been experiencing.
And we'll look at the evidence base for various treatments in a moment. But I'm wondering if anxiety is something that you struggled with and what helped you deal with it and what helped or hindered you in seeking treatment. You can get in touch with us on Facebook and you can stay anonymous there too if you'd prefer. You can send us a direct message via our Facebook page. You're hearing from Dr. Jeannie Yu. She's a GP and a clinical advisor to NPS Medicine Wise, and Dr. Simon Kinsella too. He's a clinical psychologist who deals with a lot of anxiety cases. Jenny, let's look at treatments. Cognitive behaviour therapy or CBT is listed as the frontline treatment. How useful is that for your average anxiety sufferer, and what does the research say about how effective it is?
Cognitive behaviour therapy is the most commonly recommended treatment for anxiety disorders, and it's the one which has the strongest evidence for it. It's very practical, it's skills-based, it's goal-oriented, and most people who engage in cognitive behavioural therapy, or CBT as we call it for short, have some benefit from it. And about 50% of people find that they have resolution of their symptoms after going through a full course of cognitive behavioural therapy.
There's also mindfulness, which gets touted as a treatment for just about everything these days. What specific kind of mindfulness has been shown to be effective if you're suffering anxiety?
So that might be something that Simon's in a better position to answer.
Simon, would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think mindfulness is a really key tool, and I use it in combination with CBT and other therapies as well. And it really forms the basis of understanding how the world is affecting you. So mindfulness techniques like taking time to reflect, like meditating, even like being aware of your breathing and how your body is responding to your thinking and to the environment, really help to set the scene for what's next in treatment. So understanding what the key symptoms are and how to help redirect someone's attention.
So it can be used as a complementary treatment to, say, cognitive
absolutely.
Behaviour therapy?
Yes, absolutely. And really, cognitive behaviour therapy has been around for longer than those other therapies, even though mindfulness has its roots in Buddhism as well. Within cognitive behaviour therapy, there's been these threads of mindfulness and threads of schema therapy as well. And what the mindfulness and schema therapy research has done is to draw those things out and to show us how to use those techniques more effectively.
Now, schema therapy is an emerging therapy. What's involved in that?
Schema therapy looks at the underlying lens, I suppose, that we understand our world through. So as we're brought up, we learn to expect different things about the world based on the way that our parents treat us, based on the experiences we have at school, based on mentors and so on. So a person who's brought up in a loving, consistent, stable environment tends to believe that the world is going to be a safe place. A person who's brought up in a violent, unpredictable environment has a totally different schema and totally different view of what to expect from the world.
They might not be wrong, though.
They might not be wrong. And certainly, if you look at a person's family of origin, then if that's their family of origin, then that's the environment they're brought up in, and that's how they have to learn to relate to the world. And helping them to move past that is about, first of all, identifying how they've formed that schema, and then getting them to look more realistically at the whole world and to understand that the things they've been brought up to believe aren't necessarily true.
Now, Simon, I'd like to ask too, how you know when it is time to consider drugs? Because a lot of people are worried about ending up on medication for the rest of their life. And I heard one person say, I just felt like I was giving up if I considered drugs. How do you know if that is not going to be a useful option for you?
Well, I think the things to consider are how unwell you are. So is the anxiety at a point where you're actually unable to get up in the morning or go to work? Are you finding you can't function in certain settings? There are other considerations like how long the condition has been a problem for you too. If the condition is resistant to the talking therapies, then medication might actually be useful. There's sometimes also physiological things going on for a person. We know that some people do have a chemical imbalance in their brain that can really best be addressed by taking medication. So it's a balance of working on those different factors and understanding a person's belief system as well.
Dr. Jeannie Yu, you're a clinical advisor to NPS Medicine Wise as well as a GP. And the education program that you mentioned before, where you're visiting 8,000 GPs across the country to talk about effective treatments, people might wonder if it's being conducted by a body called Medicine Wise, if it's biased towards drug solutions when anxiety has such strong non-drug interventions available for some people. Is the education program pushing doctors towards drug-based treatments?
Not at all, Hilary. In fact, quite the opposite. NPS Medicine Wise, it has been created to promote quality use of medicines. And quality use of medicines means only using medicines when they're the best option. And then if you do go and use medicines, then choosing the right one and using them in the best way possible to get the best outcomes. So in anxiety, we know that the mainstay of treatment is in fact psychological treatments, such as cognitive behavioural therapy. Sometimes there is a place for medicines and medicines can be very useful, but usually initially our focus is actually on the psychological approach.
Let's talk quickly too about online treatments, because people might wonder how they could be as effective as sitting down with a real live therapist, Jeannie. How do they work?
So again, Simon's probably got a little more expertise in this area, but the idea with online treatments, they're a more recent development in the last decade. And what they do is they take the individual through a process of psychological insight and training, if you like, in a very structured way. And it's provided in a way which it's accessible and affordable and offers privacy. So they can be a very good adjunct to other forms of treatment for anxiety disorders.
And that sounds like a lot of pros, but I imagine also you'd be relying on people to sustain them under their own steam. Simon, does that work?
It can work in certain situations, and particularly when people are aware that there aren't many other resources around them, or if they're too anxious to actually get out there and find face-to-face treatments. Some of our clients have to go through that process of learning to manage their anxiety in their own homes before they can actually leave the home to come and seek treatment. And then there's the individualisation of treatment too, which the online therapies are fantastic, but they can't really individualise things as much as you can when you're working face-to-face with a practitioner.
I'd like to ask you too, Simon, how much of a difference do you see in your clients when they start to get the treatment that suits them, when they start to see a way forward that might be different to how they've been living for up to 8 years?
Well, the good news is for the majority of people, it's really dramatic change. So they go from having trouble going to sleep, having trouble switching their thoughts off, constantly worrying about what might go wrong, to being able to enjoy life more and focus on the here and now and sleep better. And it really does make a dramatic difference to their quality of life and their quality of relationships.
That's really good news. Dr. Simon Kinsella is a clinical psychologist who treats many clients with anxiety disorders. And Dr. Jeannie Yu, too, is a GP and a clinical advisor to NPS Medicine Wise. Jeannie and Simon, thanks so much for joining us today.
That's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure, Hilary.
And if this discussion has raised any issues for you, don't keep it in. You can reach out for help. You might want to talk to your GP, or if you need to talk to someone right now, Lifeline is there, 13 11 14.